Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. Today's episode is another of the Control Room series, where I bring my friend Ryan onto the podcast to talk about all things Magic the Gathering. So, without further ado, I'm going to reintroduce Ryan to the show. Hey, Ryan, how's it going today?
Nah, pretty good. Haven't been up to a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's kind of the way a lot of us have been lately, you know, outside of work and whatnot. But anyway, today's episode of the podcast is going to be about planned construction versus play-tested construction. And effectively, we're going to do a discussion about deck-building philosophies as well. And mostly, we're going to be talking about building your deck through a planned process, i.e., you know, we're probably thinking about something like goldfishing a deck, for instance, using the MTG Goldfish database, something like that, as well as play testing, which is going to be more of a chaotic shoot from the hip approach to building your initial deck and trying to improve your deck through incremental improvements and play testing. So without further ado, I think we are going to get started here. So Ryan, obviously, I just gave a very high-level summary of what I would consider planned construction and playtesting construction is, but could you go a little bit more into these definitions of yours? I know these were your terms, and I want the listeners to have the opportunity to kind of hear what you were thinking about both of these in comparison to each other.
I don't even know if those are necessarily my terms as much as I came up... I thought about like the different ways that a person can construct a commander deck. I suppose we're talking about commander as a format as opposed to something like, you know, modern or standard where there's sort of different ideas. And I suppose I'm thinking about I'm not thinking about prescriptive deck building strategies in terms of like lists of things that one would want in a deck or methods of constructing a deck, but more like methods that you arrive at a deck. So not really about the content of it, but
more about your process, right?
Yeah, more about your train process of thought, by which you even come to having a commander deck. So that means not talking about what one should have in it, not talking about the things to look for, anything like that, but just talking about how a plan comes together or whether you have a plan at all, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So let's just start off with the planned construction. Obviously, this is I did mention MTG Goldfish a minute ago. That's a great website if you're looking to try to plan your decks, but also includes things like EDH Rec or Scryfall, Architect, things like that. So effectively, how would you, Ryan, define planned construction under these premise? Under this premise?
I mean, I don't know if I'd even define it because I don't think there really is a term for that. Maybe there is, but what I would say is that it's just the idea that before you're even throwing together a deck, you already have an idea what your deck is going to do, and you already know what you're doing. Not only that, but you've probably either play tested it or you have a list of cards, for example, that you've already sort of assembled. Or you have like a deck list that you're working from, and you already have an idea exactly where things are going to go. Now, that doesn't mean that this is a final iteration kind of thing. This is not something that you're going to be throwing together and then it's going to just stay that way. Obviously, with every kind of deck you construct, you're going to have changes made to it after you construct it, right? There's always an iterative sort of system to deck construction. There's always going to be incremental changes made after the thing is thrown together. But if we're talking about planning it out beforehand, that means that everything is done long before you even play your first land or even show up to a commander table. You've already figured out what the curve is. You've already figured out what your win cons are. You've already figured out the kind of removal you're running, the colors you're running. Well, I suppose I'd hope that you figured out what colors you're running. You've already figured out exactly how you want to make your commander benefit your deck? Either do you want it commander agnostic? Do you want it commander focus? How exactly you want it all done together? And you've already figured out exactly in each stage of the game how it's going to work, right? I mean, I suppose that would probably be how you look at it, right?
Yeah, I mean, when I think about planning a commander deck out, you know, from scratch, I typically have started with an idea, and I... So usually this is going to be the commander. I find a commander that I really want to build around. And I try to... I typically go to EDH Rec, look up that commander's page, start seeing what's on there, and then I tried to build around that sort of strategy. One of the best examples of this was how I originally built my Queen Marchesa Aristocrats deck. Aristocrats is one of the most common themes for a Marchesa deck, and I effectively started building that deck a year or two ago when I wanted to start really upping my power level, because I knew that Aristocrats was a strong strategy. It wasn't something I really had a lot of experience with, but through the EDH Rec website, I was able to find a whole lot of really good cards. Obviously, you're going to want your Zulaport, Cutthroat, your Blood Artist, trigger types, but you're also going to want a lot of creatures to sacrifice, things like that, make a lot of tokens. And I was able to start building some sacrifice outlets, let's say one of the altars, for instance, Altar Dementia, Phyrexian Altar, Ashnod's Altar, all those great altars. You're going to want those in that sort of deck. And so I was able to utilize EDH Rec mostly, as well as some Scryfall and Gatherer, as odd as that sounds, to start trying to be able to get some cards in the deck. And then obviously over time, I was able to improve the deck by working with my local playgroup, acquiring more cards, improving the quality of the deck. But it's a big difference from what I would consider to be the other way, kind of the playtesting approach as we've sort of defined it here, where you're more haphazardly throwing a deck together and kind of just seeing what works based on an idea, versus here, I knew exactly what kind of deck I wanted to build. I just didn't really know what cards to put in there until I looked it up, and then I started to eventually improve the deck as I started to play. So I definitely went in with a plan saying, I want to have Queen Marchesa, I want to make this deck run in a certain way, and I need the right cards and the right mana base to make sure this deck runs as smoothly as possible. That's really how I would define this sort of deck construction.
I mean, in this case, there's not even, I don't even know if there's any terms for it, but, you know, in one case, you're shooting from the hip and maybe even improvising a little bit. And in the other case, you are really ensuring that the deck you're constructing has had everything planned out beforehand, generally, right? So you're going way beyond just making sure your mana base is okay and making sure your commander has some cards in there that probably work with your commander. You're already, hopefully, have already figured out how you want each beat of the game to progress. And also, hopefully, you've already figured out what kind of answers you want in your deck in case things don't go your way or in case something else pops up, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Ryan, how about you give us an example of your Torbran Thane of Red Fell deck? Obviously, you originally built that kind of as a hodgepodge of cards. I remember when you built that deck, and over time, you've eventually really started to develop into a much stronger deck. So I would consider it to be kind of a planned deck in a way that you, when you did start really trying to fine-tune that deck, you had a plan in place. You wanted to be able to build around Torbran, and you started making it from kind of this strange 100-card red deck into more of a group slug deck, which had a lot of focus and can be quite vicious when it wants to be.
Yeah, it started out as a whole selection of red cards and burn cards that I acquired probably about 12 years ago or 11 years ago-ish for a deck idea that I wanted to come up with to replace my mono red Goblin EDH deck. At the time, Goblin EDH, that wasn't really nearly the kind of mono red Goblin EDH that we have to get today, you know, where you mm-hmm. have stuff like Krenko and you have tons of cards that can power that. A lot of very powerful goblins. Back then, which is prior to the Zendikar block, there wasn't a whole lot to choose from. You had like Goblin Recruiter and Goblin Pile Lackey and Goblin Pile Driver and other cards like that, but I couldn't afford any of that stuff. So I just threw together as many goblins as I could get my hands on with the deck, and it didn't work well because the only readily available legendary goblin at the time was the Ib Halfheart Goblin Tactician from Time Spiral and or Future Sight. I actually can't remember which one he was from, but he was not very good as a commander. Better in the 99 of a goblin deck, honestly. So I broke that apart, but I vowed that one day I would make a decent mono red EDH deck. And I acquired all these different red burn spells and red spells all around the same time by trading for them. And I had a whole fistful of those things. But I just never got around to actually throwing them together into a commander deck. So those sat around for almost another 9 years or so before I actually, I still hadn't put them together when I started playing my first commander games with you. And then eventually I really went back and actually threw things together and actually, and at the time I was using Hazoret actually, which didn't work that great as a burn commander anyways. But I settled on using Torbran and figured out that a mono red burn deck, it really wasn't the way Torbran was wanting me to go. I guess you can use Torbran for burn, but it really was pointing me in the direction of a group slug kind of archetype. And so I started making little changes to it. I'm still making changes and still making additions to that deck to try to bring it up to a decent standard, you know. But I think that a deck that originally had some planning to it is now kind of turned into a deck where I've just been slowly making play-tested changes to it, sort of in a more chaotic process. So I guess that illustrates how those two strategies can end up being combined to a certain extent.
Yeah, so I feel like they're definitely not mutually exclusive. Obviously, we are going to our best laid plans are never all are not always going to work when we're trying to plan a deck out, whether that's our dealing with our mana curve or whether that's dealing with just some of our cards just don't seem to do what we want them to do, or non-bows, things like that. And so it's obviously good to do play testing and try to see if your deck works. But yeah, typically, I feel like it's your approach to how you originally built the deck which sets these two concepts apart versus how you try to build and improve them. Obviously, with the plan deck, you're coming in with a defined plan, like my Marchesa build, for instance, was that I knew exactly what deck I wanted to build, versus the other one, which we're going to talk about here shortly, where you're doing this more of a chaotic process, trying to build around an idea more than something established, or, you know, having a list or anything like that. So I will bring another example into this one. I remember right at the beginning of the quarantine period, so March 2020, I started to build a Savara Queen of the Golgari deck. And I wanted to build an interesting Golgari commander. Obviously, Golgari at the time was my favorite guild. So I wanted something a little bit different, a little bit something off the beaten path that hadn't quite been done a ton. Obviously, Marin was still extremely expensive at the time, and I kind of wanted to do something different. So I looked up Savara cards on EDH Rec mostly, as well as some Scryfall, and made one large order, again, from Card Kingdom. And they were great in getting all the cards shipped to me in great condition. And I basically tossed them all together with some lands and started to play. Obviously, the deck wasn't great the first few times I played it. There were some cards in there that I've now since taken out and I've replaced with better, you know, quote-unquote better cards to make it a stronger deck, and it's much stronger now than it was then. But the fact is, I had a plan in place. I procured the cards that I needed to try to get the idea down, and that's really kind of the poster child for me of how I used to plan decks. I had my list in head. I looked up a whole bunch of cards, and I found the list that I wanted to build by using these planning websites to make sure that I had the deck that I wanted in hand a couple of weeks later to be able to play. So I feel like that's a really good example of how you are able to take that idea, which is I want to build with this commander doing this one specific thing, to then being able to go to the I need now procure these cards to then playing your first games, and then after a while you can start saying, well, you know, these cards aren't working out exactly the way I wanted to, the mana curve is still a little too high, I'm probably not using this 5 mana card here, maybe I can get something that's 3 or 4 mana, something that, you know, a creature, maybe something I could sacrifice, I don't know, just different ways you can approach this situation. But you had that plan in place at first versus just kind of winging it, I suppose.
Yeah, and it seems like a lot of the decks that you constructed have consisted of you kind of doing stuff from the fly a little bit.
Oh yeah, if Ryan, do you have any other thoughts on plan construction, or do you want to go to kind of by the shooting by the hip, game testing, play testing? Yeah.
Let's go to the playtest / shoot from the hip improvisational method.
Okay.
Or
how would you define shooting from the hip on this one?
So I guess that could include both having a collection of cards and throwing them together into a commander deck, but also building a deck around a commander and then sort of figuring out as you go what works in a deck and what doesn't. So, mm-hmm. Getting a commander deck online being the priority, and then sort of determining how the pieces fit, what things are really bad, what things are more synergistic, and also what you can eliminate and make more efficient from your commander deck. So in this case, you start with a commander and hopefully a mana base, but and hopefully have a general idea kind of what strategy your commander leans towards, or if your commander doesn't lean specifically in one direction, then determining some kind of direction that it's going in, and then looking around your collection for cards that kind of fit into that idea, or maybe even acquiring cards that are, I guess, hazard to say, maybe even good stuffy for your color combinations of your commander, and focusing on getting a deck in place so that it's playable. That way that you can get some games in and then see maybe what particular line of cards is most effective. Hopefully you have some kind of win condition as well. And if you don't, figure out what your win condition might be for your deck. But basically you're looking to discover either like a lane of play or an idea that you find most enjoyable with your deck, or you're looking to see if there's any emergent patterns of play that are the most effective among the cards that you have, and then I guess discarding the cards from your deck that don't fit into that theme, and then adding cards into it iteratively that support that that strategy of play, right? So there is less of an element of planning everything out and having a focus on a deck list, and more on having a deck, and then the deck list itself just becomes an extension of your progression as you add things and remove things and tinker with it over time.
Mm-hmm. So can you go over your example of how you effectively rebuilt Torbran into a group slug deck by kind of seeing what you had and then making some changes?
Yeah, I found out that mono red burn wasn't working for me. A lot of it because you're jettisoning a lot of cards from your hand, and it's hard to reload your hand quite as easily in red. There's a lot more impulsive draw printed in the last couple of years now that can help refill that, but I found that Torbran itself leaned more into a gradual sort of damage output, enhancement of damage output kind of direction, as opposed to dumping lots of direct damage and multiple opponent damage spells for your win conditions. So group slug being something that putting down enchantments and creatures that can ping opponents, preferably all your opponents at once, for small amounts of damage, which is then enhanced by Torbran, as opposed to fireballing an opponent for lethal, which is a little harder to do in mono red, I think. And I don't think that Torbran is the best commander for that. I actually think that something like Neheb the Eternal or another one of those commanders that has ways to generate a lot of mana on them or card advantage actually do better for strategies where you want to be dealing large amounts of burst damage. And I think Torbran works when you're putting out enchantments on the field that hurt everybody, because he breaks symmetry really, really well because of that additional +2 to every single red effect ability card that deals damage to an opponent's creatures or to an opponent themselves. His damage boost makes it so that any symmetrical multiple, like a table-wide damage spell is always going to do more damage to your opponents than it's going to do to you. So that symmetry or that fair method of damage dealing becomes unfair pretty quickly, especially when you combine his +2 damage with like a damage doubler or a damage tripler, and then things get really interesting as you start stacking those abilities up. And I kind of fell into that route of construction for my deck after figuring out that seemed to be more effective than my previous strategy, which is throwing a bunch of instants and sorceries in there and trying to get a bunch of mana and hit individual targets at the table for lots of damage, individual targets being mostly players. That just wasn't working out for me with Torbran. And instead, the group slug strategy worked out a lot better for him.
Mm-hmm. And I do have a few examples of how I've basically shot from the hip and built some of my EDH decks. So I'm going to start off with kind of the middling example here, I suppose. I mean, it didn't exactly come out of nothing. My Alayla Artful Provocateur deck basically started as a mono blue deck with Psy Master Thopterist as the commander. I figured, okay, I haven't really built a blue deck. Kind of want to try something with, and then also do an artifacts deck. So I originally built that deck, and then over time, I began to realize it wasn't quite what I was looking for. I was trying to create a whole bunch of Thopter tokens and kill people with flying creatures. And Alayla effectively allowed me to do the exact same thing, but I could bring in two other colors, being white and black. So obviously Psy's in the 99 of that deck right now, but I feel like the deck works better now with trying to pump out flyers because I'm able to pretty much do the things I was before, but I'm able to do it much better this time around. So I feel like the overall deck has gotten a lot stronger because of that. Now, again, we can sit here and talk about, is it a great deck? I mean, I don't know, but it's definitely one of my more powerful decks, if we want to use such a loaded term there. I think it's more consistent than some of my other decks, and it certainly seems to always do something. Now, if that's something powerful, I don't always know. Sometimes it can get shut down. Obviously, that's Commander for you. But I definitely think it's more consistent than the Psy deck ever was. But I think what really excites me as a brewer is kind of my jank brewing concepts that I do. Basically, I would define my brewing technique as extremely chaotic. I typically end up starting to brew a deck based on a commander that I find in my long box of chaff. And I start trying to find an interesting way to be able to build around it. So obviously, if there's a certain line of play that is effectively staple to a commander, where it really benefits one particular style of play, I'm typically not going to do that thing. I much rather try to build those decks and make people say, wow, I've never seen that before, or wow, I never really thought about that before. And that's really where I get my chops as a jank brewer, is I love to be able to...
Going for those theme-based strategies. For that Lord of the Rings deck.
I wouldn't. No, I'm definitely not building a Lord of the Rings deck. I'm
Lord of the Rings jank.
No. This has nothing to do with Lord of the Rings. It has everything to do with the fact that I'm able to find I'm going to call it a unique strategy, something that doesn't necessarily fit the commander to a T, but something that still makes it very interesting to play and to play against. So I'm going to use that Rayov Master Smith deck I just built a couple weeks ago after we talked about our underrated picks for Commander Legends commanders. And I know that's been a fairly popular episode, and I want to give people an update on how that deck has been going. The first time I was able to run that deck, I was actually able to start using Rayov himself, kind of as a weird Voltron strategy. It wasn't the intended point, but when I was able to start swinging in for six, so three and then double strikes, so I was able to start hitting people for six damage on turn three, using, I think, a Bone Saw that I had out of my hand. I mean, that right there already is extremely powerful in the fact that I was able to start building around a commander who obviously says your other creatures have double strike when they attack, when they're equipped. But the fact is, Rayov himself can also be an interesting Voltron option if you absolutely need to. Now, it's not a Voltron deck. Obviously, I don't really intend to swing with Rayov in that deck all that often. But the point is that I can try to find ways to utilize him as a Voltron strategy if absolutely necessary, kind of as like a third or fourth, you know, something like a safety valve. The fact is, it's in the deck. He's very cheap to cast, two mana to start off with for a 2/2. I mean, he's a freaking bear. And you start getting some of that chip damage in early, because that can really start to add up as the game goes along. And then, obviously, I wanted to build around Rayov, so I started thinking, okay, how am I going to start getting some interesting equipment in here, enchantments, things like that, to give my creatures double strike? Well, a lot of people would start throwing in extremely powerful equipment, you know, the swords of everything and everything. But again, those are $50, $60 if you want Sword, Fire, and Ice, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously, I don't have any of those in my collection, so I really started to look into my equipment pile in my artifacts and started trying to find some interesting pieces.
Lying around on your table here? A couple swords, you know?
Nope.
Any $30 artifacts lying around that you can just slap into a commander deck?
Nope. Instead, I was looking for whatever equipment I could get out easily and fairly cheaply. So I started going with things like Shuko, Bone Saw, even something, let's see, what else am I using? I'm probably using Bone Splitter, for instance, you know, just a lot of really cheap artifacts that I'm able to throw into that deck, because then all the creatures that I have are able to get serious augment ability from these enchantments and equipment pieces, and then I'm able to start swinging them in for massive damage. And I really enjoy that sort of building a deck instead of planning one out ahead of time, because I never quite know what interesting synergies I'm going to find from cards in my long box. So if I was to go on Scryfall, for instance, or EDH Rec, I could easily build a Rayov deck that pretty much everyone else who has ever submitted a deck list using Rayov Master Smith as the commander would have built. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. That's how I used to build decks. But I've really started to earn my chops as a jank brewer by starting to try to find those cards that people have never really heard of before or aren't really used in that fashion. And again, Rayov's ability doesn't necessarily mean you have to equip any sort of particular equipment to him or enchantment, just that the creature has to be enchanted and or equipped. So all of a sudden, you can start throwing some really interesting enchantments or equipment on your creatures that don't even necessarily have anything to do with increasing power or toughness. You could throw some interesting stuff like Mask of Memory on there, for instance, which if you can do combat damage to a player, all of a sudden you're drawing two cards. Or you can throw Infiltration Lens on there. So if Rayov gets blocked, you draw two cards.
Yeah, I have Rayov in the 99 of my Wyleth deck, and he is an absolute beast, because I think that it's very easy to underestimate double strike in terms of damage output. Suddenly, your commander or the creatures on your field that happen to have equipment end up being far more terrifying than they were before casting Rayov.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that I have Rayov in my command zone means that I have access to him at all times. So basically, I have, I think, 15 to 18 creatures in that deck. Most of them get stronger the more things that I put on them, like Champion of the Flame, for instance. That got printed in Commander Legends. Gets +2/+2 for each equipment slash enchantment. I think it's equipment, Maybe it includes enchantments, but it definitely gets +2/+2 for each equipment placed on it. Well, all of a sudden, it starts as a 2/2. You put a bone saw in there, that thing is a 5/4, and then with Rayov, it has first strike. And basically, all you're out is one mana for that bone saw equip activation. So the fact is I was able to find a commander that may be extremely overlooked, but still has a lot of power. By kind of changing the way I was looking at things, as most people like in your Wyleth deck there, again, Rayov is a great piece in the 99, but I found a lot more value in him as a commander than I would in the 99 because I have access to him at all times. So even though I may have a suboptimal commander, quote-unquote, in terms of the quote-unquote power discussion, I feel like I still have a whole lot of utility in the command zone to be able to build the rest of my strategy around, and that allowed me to really open up the cards that I had available to me in the deck. All of a sudden, instead of trying to build up other creatures and then having Rayov in there to kind of push you over the brink, all of a sudden I have that ability to kind of break the game by giving all my attacking creatures double strike, and then I'm able to start throwing creatures in there that really love to have or really love to be equipped or enchanted, and all of a sudden I'm able to boost their power and then give them double strike and then hopefully slam Gisela down and then double all my damage further than that. I remember in the game where I was playing this, I was churning out rock tokens with Togo, Goblin Ooh, Weaponsmith.
Togo.
And obviously those rocks are equipment. So I started giving my creatures rocks, and all of a sudden now they're getting double strike.
I think it was my idea to team Rayov up with the Togo, and that way you have a plentiful collection of equipments for just throwing out there onto your board and attaching willy-nilly to all kinds of creatures.
Yeah, and it was a really good idea. I really liked that theory, and I was able to put it in practice. I was able to slam Togo down in like turn 5 or something and started being able to crank out rocks shortly thereafter.
Now you just need a Sigarda's Aid so you can attach them all for free.
True. But yeah, so it's just one of those things where I feel like when I shoot from the hip and do kind of a chaotic deck build that I actually have more freedom to really express myself through my deck. I'm able to find a whole bunch of cards that I have lying around that may not have a home elsewhere in any of my other decks, but may be absolutely perfect in my chaotic deck build. So all of a sudden, I start getting my pile of cards out there. Again, I know a lot of them aren't going to make it into the final deck list, but again, I'm not necessarily looking to optimize my strategy. That's not really why I build decks. I build those decks to start doing some interesting, kind of funny things. And obviously, I'm going to include some cards that may be less than optimal. But again, these are ones I have on hand. These are ones that I think are going to do some interesting thing, even if it's not necessarily what's stapled on the commander. And so I've been able to get a lot of mileage out of a lot of the decks that I've built in this manner because, and it's really the reason why I keep going back to those time and again, is I feel like they are powerful. Again, I had a interesting conversation about deck building with a couple of my previous guests, Ursa Bearwalker and Chris the Commander Mechanic, for instance. So obviously, if you're listening to this, you should definitely listen to those episodes. They were great conversations and really kind of outlined different ways of building your decks, and as well as my treatise on jank brewing and why jank is not junk. Obviously, you can still have a jank deck and have it be extremely powerful and fun to play. And that's really what I'm prescribing to these days as a deck builder, is I don't necessarily want to build the deck that everyone else has. I want to build something that may be 50% what everyone else has. And then the other 50%, you're going to have to figure out exactly what that is, because it is different. May not be as powerful as the other, 1,000 decks. My Layla deck may not be the most powerful deck out of the 3,000, whatever is on the EDH Rec website, but it's definitely my deck, has a lot of personal touches in there, and it maybe has a different interesting win condition that other people haven't really thought about. So I just really enjoy building decks in this way, and the chaotic process allows my brain to start thinking, what if? It's not, what is my deck going to do? My question is always, what if? What if this happens? Sure, it's Magical Christmas Land, as a lot of players call it, but I always like asking the question, what if?
Yeah, and I guess that's part of the flexibility of that approach is maybe finding a command, or maybe even having an idea for a deck and then finding a commander that fits, or finding a commander and then having an idea that fits into that commander, and just going from there rather than sitting down and trying to plan everything out. It lets you kind of embark on a journey of discovery, I guess. when it comes to deck building, right? As a maybe more of a disciplined approach, a planning centric approach, which is more like where you have everything researched ahead of time. So I think I've used both sort of strategies when building decks, I guess. Before I even built Commander decks, I built decks for pre-releases, and I also have my I suppose it originally was a standard deck, but then became a modern deck. My black white Lorwyn Shadowmoor era aggro deck, which is back there gathering dust in my card box. That was sort of more of an emergent deck building phenomena, where I kind of began life as a pre-release deck and then kind of morphed into something else over time. And that's the way a lot of decks work, is that they start off as something else and then they shift to something else over time, just like with my Torbrand deck. You can start off with one particular play pattern and then realize that's not actually as effective as this alternative play pattern, and things kind of go from there. And you can discover things about your play pattern that you wouldn't have known if you'd set out from the beginning and planned everything else out, and purchased all the cards for that play style and everything, and realized when actually sitting down and playing that deck that maybe it's not your cup of tea, or maybe it's not working out quite as well as you thought it would. But, you know, with a more shoot from the hip style, you can kind of figure that out as you go.
Mm-hmm. And
how about you, Matt? What are your opinions on this?
I put a lot of them out there. My last comment on this is that I just really love having the flexibility to come up with different ideas, and try to have that flexibility. Obviously, you can have flexibility in how you build a deck based on your plan pre-planning, but I feel like there's a lot of joy of discovery, of finding something in your long box that you've never seen before, or that you've been looking to use for years and you've never really had a chance to.
Yeah, and I imagine that you already have a pretty good idea of what kind of mana rocks and mana dorks and what kind of base you have lined up. All the generic cards, the draw spells and all that, mm-hmm. you already have an idea what you have. Mm-hmm. So you already know I wouldn't say an auto include, but I would say a staple beginning for any deck. You already know what you have. And that may it saves you time. And then the other things, the more complicated things, the more synergistic things, like your win conditions, your protection effects for your commander, all those ideas, those things come later, after you figured out whether you want to build a reanimator deck, or whether you want to build a forced fight deck or something, or maybe something even weirder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm going to use my mono-colorless Karn Silver Golem deck as an example of this. I obviously looked up EDH Rec before I built this deck, and I wanted to at least see kind of what was in the standard Karn deck. I wanted to see where people took that deck. And then I promptly went about, built the deck, and effectively instituted almost none of those things. I just wanted to have an excuse to play a whole bunch of really janky artifacts from my long box that really had no place elsewhere, but I wanted to give it a try. So,
and it works pretty well, too, for being that construction of deck.
Yeah, and it definitely does, because I have the right pieces to make the deck work. Obviously, I have Darksteel Forge to make my artifacts indestructible. I have a lot of the artifact enablers. I do have my Foundry Inspector in there. I have just a whole bunch of very good Mirage Mirror, Mind's Eye, Forsaken Monument, a lot of what we consider staples in Mono Colorless. But again, the deck doesn't necessarily rely upon these. I also found a lot of room for just adding a whole lot of really silly and random cards. I have included a card called Chimeric Mass in that deck, which on EDH Rec, if you look it up, currently has about 88 decks that it's in on there. And effectively, it's a 3-drop artifact that says whenever one of your opponents plays a, I believe, non-artifact spell, you put a charge counter on it. And then if you take three charge counters off of Chimeric Mass, all of a sudden becomes a creature, 6/6 creature with trample until end of turn. Well, all of a sudden, you know, if you're playing a four-player game, other players are going to be playing a whole bunch of non-artifact spells. All of a sudden, you have this three-mana creature, you know, potential creature that can all of a sudden start swinging as a 6/6 for trample whenever you need it, or it can be a blocker or anything. No one uses that card because no one's really figured out if there's a use for it. But I had it in my long box for the longest time, had no idea what I was going to do with it. But all of a sudden, now it's in that deck, and I played that against our Break of the Playgroup a couple of weeks ago. And honestly, I think you guys were kind of scared at the fact that I could, at instant speed, summon a 6/6 creature with trample to my side of the field as an attacker or as a blocker.
Yeah, I mean, that's always kind of an unhelpful and nasty surprise.
Mm-hmm. I also love to run Haunted Plate Mail in that deck as well. It's a artifact that you can equip to a creature, give it +4/+4. But if you have no other creatures on the board, which can happen after a board wipe, let's say, where all your creatures go to the graveyard, all of a sudden, for zero mana and instant speed, it can become a 4/4 creature. Well, all of a sudden, you know, these are cards that don't necessarily get a whole lot of play in most decks, because again, Haunted Plate Mail, 4/4 equipment for 4 with an equip cost of 4, is not going to really be the best card on the field. It's not even going to be great in, you know, you're just not going to play it in the vast majority of decks these days. But in that deck, I found it to be extremely useful because a lot of times I lose my creatures, whether I've lost my Metalwork Colossus or Karn is blown up or anything like that. I find myself often dealing with empty boards, and all of a sudden Haunted Plate Mail gives me a 4/4 that I can just basically use at instant speed as a creature. So I feel like these are two examples of what I'm talking about for that deck specifically. Is I built the shell of the deck based on what a lot of people, or how a lot of people build the Karn Silver Golem deck, and then I put in like 10 to 15 of what I would consider kind of my own cards. Things that I don't really know if they are going to work as I intend, but I want to find out. Because jank brewing is, you're right, is all about the discovery. I want to see if these cards are going to work out the way I want them to. So I'm running only a few basic wastes. I'm running a whole bunch of different utility lands, things that can sacrifice themselves, cryptic caves. I'm running that, War Room. Just a whole bunch of random cards. I'm even running Field of the Dead in that deck. And that's an extremely powerful card in most decks. I just kind of want to see if it works, honestly. It's just kind of that playtesting, seeing what works, throwing darts at the wall is how I usually talk about this. And you see what sticks. I'm going to throw
I have a whole bunch of uncommons that I got to throw into a deck.
Yeah, so it's effectively how I'm looking at this is I just have a whole bunch of darts. I'm throwing them at a dartboard, and I want to see what sticks and what falls off. And some cards that may be really good in most decks are going to fall off. Maybe I don't really see a whole need to throw a lot of these staple cards or so-called staple cards in my deck. But I want to see if these janky artifacts that have no real purpose in any other deck really work in that deck. And I've early returns on that one have actually been rather encouraging. I've really enjoyed how my Haunted Plate Mail and Chimeric Mass have worked out these first couple of games of that deck. And there's a whole bunch of other cards in that deck that I don't believe you've seen yet that may fall under the trash category for most players, but I think are honestly treasure for me. I just love seeing those cards in action. And sure, they may not work out all the time, but honestly, as I've talked about on this channel before, I prefer the games where you remember how those games went down. Because, you know, if you're playing at higher power levels, you may not really remember how certain games went down, but if you remember playing a certain card and doing interesting things with it, I feel like you're going to remember that card better. So again, another example being last night, where I was using Karn to crew the Weatherlight. I mean, I'm doing 4 damage, woohoo, it's, you know,
it's a flavor win.
It's not going to win me the game, but on the other hand, is that the Weatherlight has a fairly good ability, allows me to find a historic card in the top 5 of my deck and put it in my hand. But also just the fact that, you know, Karn is crewing the Weatherlight. You know, this is a Vorthos and a flavor win. You're right. And
yeah, I mean,
I just love those interactions.
If it doesn't win you the game, then at least it wins you the Vorthos spit distance contest, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those things I'm going to remember about that game, even though I don't even remember how that game really ended. But all that's important is I do remember the fact that Karn crewed the Weatherlight. And that's really what I wanted to get out of that deck is, sure, I have Forsaken Monument in there. Sure, I have Mind's Eye. Sure, I have Mirage Mirror. These are generically good artifacts. Sure, I have Darksteel Forge. But the way I look at that Karn deck is I just love running all those really funny artifacts that no one really ever talks about or has even heard of, and being able to utilize those for fairly good advantage throughout the game using Karn.
Yeah, now you just have to have all of the pieces of Urza's Legacy in that deck, and then along with the Weatherlight, and then you can be like, woo, I've got the Legacy weapon, flavor win for me.
Yeah, I unfortunately can't run Legacy Weapon because it's Wooburg color identity, but...
Well, I mean, that you have the Legacy Weapon if you have all of the pieces of Urza's Legacy.
Eh.
So, I mean, but I guess Nolrod is on the reserve list, so...
And $70.
You'll have a hard time completing the Legacy Weapon, unfortunately,
yep,
without the Nolrod.
So, Ryan, how would you go about building kind of in this chaotic fashion? How... In your builds of decks that you're putting together right now, how do you approach this sort of deck building, and how would you define your process?
Well, right now, well, not right now, but soon, when I get some cards, I'm going to be building a Volrath Sultai EDH deck, kind of built around him, a commander-centric kind of style of deck, and I'm not really sure exactly what path to take with him because he's a pretty broad and broadly useful commander on the battlefield that can copy people's creatures and is a solid 7/5 beater. So I actually don't know of the many archetypes that are on his EDH rec page. It's pretty obvious that people have gone in a lot of different directions with him, and I'm not really sure what direction I'm going in. So I'm going to get a bunch of cards together, throw him in a deck like that, and put a bunch of different themes in there and see what sticks and how they work together and if they work together at all. And if they don't work together at all, then at least I'll be able to say, well, it was a noble experiment before it crashed like a lead balloon to the ground. I'll have the fun and the joy of hopefully cutting out a bunch of the deck and putting in things that maybe help it better. But that's part of the journey of discovery, is also the journey of failure. And I'll tell you, I have built many more failure EDH decks than I have built successful EDH decks, given that I only have two EDH decks on hand at the moment, and I have like three other ones that I've constructed at some other points that for whatever reason didn't really stick around. That doesn't even include the countless other non-EDH decks that I kind of put together and then broke apart for whatever reason. So when it comes to Volrath and when it comes to Sultai, I'm going to see what sticks, just throw the darts at the wall, sort of see how it patterns, whether there's a particular strategy or not. I think I'm going to maybe put some -1/-1 counter cards in there, +1/+1 counter cards in there, copy effects, shapeshifters, maybe even some cards with infect. Throw all that together in a deck and just see what emerges on top, and see what works best in the deck crewed by Volrath, and just go from that point. So this is kind of an experiment for me in the process of sort of a more iterative deck building style.
Mm-hmm. So I think we can pretty much say that we just enjoy this journey of discovery in our chaotic deck building versus the deck planning, where we really like seeing where we're going. We have a plan and we know what we want to do. And just personally, I prefer chaotic. There's nothing wrong with either. I just prefer the chaotic deck build because it fits with my personality more, of never being completely satisfied with my decks and always tinkering with them or breaking ones that don't perform apart and building new ones that pass my fancy.
And as for me, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing, so I think most things are going to end up being a little haphazard because of that. So I think it just, it'll probably, most of the decks that I construct and most of the ways I modify decks will be more from intuition than from careful statistical analysis anyways.
Mm-hmm. So I think that'll bring our show today to a close. It was great having you on the show again, Ryan. It's been great to have you.
Yeah, you know, it's always good to get on the ye olde control room podcast floor here and chat about the things that rustle our jimmies and make our motors hum when it comes to the wonderful world of Magic the Gathering.
All right, and if you liked what you've heard here, you can find more of my podcast, or our podcast in this case, at MTG on Twitter, and you can find the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Casts, and wherever fine podcasts are found. So I'd like to thank everyone for listening here today. It's been great having you. I hope we imparted some of our deck-building wisdom to you, or at least some of, 45 minutes of utter trash. I don't know. I can't make your opinion for you, but hopefully you found it was useful. So for Ryan and for myself, my name's MJ. You've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. Have a great rest of your day.